Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Time now for New Zealand sporting history.
Mahe Drysdale digging deep. This is going to come down to the wire.
It's Dami Martin coming to the line. Has he taken Mahe Drysdale? It looks very much like it. It's Dami Martin from Drysdale. But Drysdale has a finish. Oh, it's a photo. It's a photo finish.
Oh, good times. It's Rio 2016. And with the Paris Olympics on the horizon, what a great time to speak to a New Zealand sporting legend who made a name for himself going backwards. Mahe Drysdale is a two-time Olympic gold medalist and five-time world rowing champion in the single sculls. Each Thursday we speak to a different hero of New Zealand sport, and today, five-time recipient of New Zealand Sportsman of the Year, the only person to win more than three times, Mahe Drysdale joins me now. Hello there.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for your time today, and thanks for the great memories.
Oh, no problem. It's always nice to look back a little bit and remember the good times when I was a few kilos lighter.
I guess that's, and I haven't seen you, Mahe, but I'm sure you're exaggerating, but I guess that's part of an athlete's life, is that once the training is gone, you have to work a bit harder on that sort of thing.
Yes, yeah, for sure. I think you take it for granted when you're in the boat. You just burn off so many calories that you can eat what you like. You've got to be a bit careful once you're finished.
I guess you would have calorie loaded too heading into those races.
I guess for us, the way the training all kind of works is the big calorie loading is when you're training, and then you've got to be a little bit careful as you get to those competitions, because you do back off a wee bit in the training. You don't want to put on weight then. So yeah, it's sort of around the Olympics, you're not loading, but you're being very careful of what you eat.
So during training, did you get sick of eating?
There was times where you had to force yourself to eat. It's weird how your body kind of, when you really push yourself to the limit, you actually lose your appetite, you lose your ability to sleep, and that's when you know you're very much on edge, which is, generally your body is very good at knowing what it wants, but when you do sort of go over that sort of limit, it does get pretty hard to do the things that you need to do to recover.
Yeah, gosh. So I think we're talking about four Olympiads for you, beginning Athens in 2004. But actually, I think the 1988 Olympics were a significant one for you. Can you tell us about your memories of that one in Seoul?
Yeah, so Seoul, I guess, was the ignition for me. And, I was about 8 years old, and, watching, Carl Lewis, I remember watching him race, and watching that, I was like, oh, I want to go to the Olympics one day. And so that really ignited, my passion for for sport and for the Olympics. Unfortunately, by the time I kind of got to university, I was not good enough at any sport to realistically go. So kind of gave that dream up and went to be an accountant.
What had you tried out up until that point?
I played everything, at school, from, kayaking to badminton to soccer to cricket, running. I did everything, and loved sport, and I lived for it. But, as I say, I was good at everything but not great at anything. And, so very much once I got to university, I sort of switched my focus.
Yeah. And then what gave wrong a go?
So I wanted to go to the Easter tourney, and that was really the catalyst for me.
Yeah.
So I was, the good thing about at the Easter tourney, you've actually got to be good enough to, represent the university, and I wasn't. But rowing had a novice grade, so that's how I got into it. And a novice grade is people would have never rowed before. So that was really my sort of a bit of an auspicious start. And just kind of just grabbed me, rowing, and I did it for a few years, and sort of again decided, oh, this is way too much hard work. And then again, the Sydney Olympics, watching Rob Waddell win, that just gave me a bit of a kick up the ass, and I went back and started rowing again. And what, 3 months later, I was invited to move to Karapiro, and as they say, the rest
Gosh.
is history.
So what does that tell us? That you could try a sport, show no real sort of national promise, and then have a mindset shift and go back to it and start looking like a champion.
Well, to be fair, I wasn't looking like a champion. And I think that was the one moment in my career that luck has kind of really played a part. And why I say luck is basically after London, everyone retired and moved on, and Rowing New Zealand were desperate and they needed to build a new future. And so they went round the national champs and they picked the 30 biggest guys at the national champs, invited them to a trial at Karapiro, and put us through their paces. Little did I know, as my coach John White, when they'd asked him about me, he said, oh, he can pull 6 minutes 10 on the for a 2K erg. And he told me that fact as I walked into to the trial. And my best at that time was 6:17. And he said, I've told them you can do 6:10, don't disappoint me.
Gosh.
And I went and pulled a 6:08, and
Oh.
that put me in the top eight in the country. And just to put that into perspective now, if I pulled a 6:08, I'd be competing with the junior athletes. And at that time it was in the top eight in the country. So that was my start, and very I guess interesting start, but that was probably the greatest development crew Rowing New Zealand's ever picked, because they got myself, Eric Murray, Carl Meyer, and Donald Leach. That was our Olympic four, so they all came out of that one boat.
You said, just to clarify, I think you said after London, a lot of people retired, but did you mean after Sydney?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, after Sydney, everyone retired.
Yeah, so that's we're talking about the year 2000. Do I
Yeah,
have the, yeah, I got that right. Okay, so
sorry. Yeah, I
yeah.
get confused with the Olympics and names. So.
Yeah, and you were there. Imagine how it is for the rest of us. So what was that for like?
It was great. Like Athens. I achieved my dream of going to the Olympics, and we did well considering, because we went in ranked 11th. We came out 5th, and we were racing the British four, with the likes of Sir Matthew Pinsent, in the stroke seat. So, it was a credible result. But for me, I kind of thought, man, I've given up my job. I've moved to Cambridge. I want to know how good I can be. And so, I was disappointed with 5th place in Athens, to if I was perfectly honest. And we had the Everswindell twins who won gold, obviously, and they were our benchmark. And I thought, okay, well, if I want to know how good I'm going to be, let's go on the single and find out. And it was very much a decision of I'll either make it or I won't, but I'll go and try to find out. And just again to put it in perspective, my best time in the single at that time was 7 minutes and 1 second, and the world best time at that time was 6:37, I think. And I thought, okay, I probably need to go sort of 6:35. So, I had to have, it was 6:34, I thought. So, I said, okay, I've got 27 seconds to make up. I think I can do that in 4 years. And, that was really how I broke it down and said, over 4 years, it's only kind of 7 seconds a year. That's achievable. And, you train 11 months a year. So that was very much my going into the single. And, what I didn't know at the time is Dick Tonks, because they were quite keen to keep that four together. It was showing quite a lot of promise. And So they didn't want me in the single, and Dick Tonks said, "Okay, give him to me. I'll coach him. I'll break him. He'll be back in the four next year." And he very nearly did. It was, that was.
You didn't know that he'd said that.
Life. No, I didn't know that. I've only found that out, since. And it was the hardest year of my life for sure. And that's when I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, and but I had the Everswindell twins as a benchmark. They were world record holders. They had the world best time at about 6:38. So I had this benchmark every day of where I had to be if I wanted to be a champion. And I never was that year, like, close to them. But I went and won my first world title in 2005, and that was very much the start of my journey in the single.
Right, you gave yourself 4 years to get up to scratch, but it took you 12 months.
Yeah, well, and that was a surprise, I think, to everyone.
Do I have this order right? You also had a pretty serious accident ahead of those world champs.
Yeah, I got hit by a water scare and fractured my back.
Man.
So, yeah, that was sort of within the middle. And funnily enough, in hindsight, it was very, very scary at the time because I couldn't feel my legs. And, I thought maybe my rowing journey was over. I was choppered to hospital. But, once I was cleared from that, it gave me sort of 10 days off training. And that was an amazing 10 days for me because, one, it allowed me to recover a wee bit from the battering I'd been taken, but also it just really gave me that fire that, what I loved was taken away. And, it was pretty scary for the day, when it happened. And, once I was sort of cleared, it just gave me another perspective of actually, man, I'm really lucky to be doing what I'm doing and I love this and, I'm going to give it my all. So it was a real change in focus.
Who stuffed up that you got hit by a water skier?
It was a bit of unfortunate sort of circumstance. We were going around a corner at Karapiro. We were four wide, and I just happened to be closest to the water skier. So that we were not probably on exactly the side we were supposed to be on. They came around the corner and it was a young boy on the water skis who, he went outside the wake and he didn't know how to turn back in. Mm-hmm. I just remember looking around and thinking, man, he's going to hit me. And, just his ski came up and slammed me right in the middle of the back. But, again, a little bit lucky, it hit me dead center on my spine. And so the shock kind of got dispersed, down my spine, and I just had two little cracks in a couple of the little wings out the side of my vertebrae. So that was pretty scary. But as I say, you sort of overcome these things and move on, and went on to become world champion. Mm-hmm. And that really gave me a huge amount of belief. I was on track.
But that was Japan that year. How good was that moment then?
Oh, that still is one of the highlights of my career. My first world title, Nikki and Juliet won in the pair. George and Nathan won in the pair, in the men's pair. And the Everswindell twins also won. So we had four gold medals, literally, and they were four races in a row. So, it was pretty fortuitous, I guess, again, with timing. Because that's when Spark at that time, which was the high performance sport of today, sort of came into existence. And from that day forward, rowing's been the best funded sport, mm-hmm. By the central organisation since. So, very, very good timing, but, very special. We had 11 people at that world champs and seven of them came away as world champions. So, it was pretty awesome.
Okay. And things went pretty well the next few years as well. But tell me about 2008 and the qualification for that Olympics, as you remember it.
Yeah, it was. So I went in as a three-time world champion with the world best time, and Rob Waddell came back and challenged me for my seat. So again, very tough to go through that, and probably a big learning for me as well, and about controlling the controllables and what could I control, and that was me going as fast as I could, but I focused on the wrong things for a period of time until I thought it was very unfair, and I still look back, and the way that I felt I was treated was poor. And that was, Rob had every right to come and challenge me for my seat. That's what rowing is about. But, I could see that this was potentially coming to a head. So in October, I'd said to Rowing New Zealand, look, is Rob coming for my seat? Do I need to defend that, or can I focus on the Olympics? And they said, look, you're a three-time world champion. Don't worry about your seat. Rob will go in the double. And so, I took them at their word and focused on the Olympics, and I got beaten a couple of times by Rob. And so, then the pressure started going on. Okay, these guys have to race off for their seats. And, I thought that was, it was 6 weeks out from a trials. They made the decision we were going to race off, and I thought that was very unfair. And, I complained about it. But you're never going to win a race by complaining. And, I had very good advice from my manager, Roger Mortimer. He said, look, Mahe, you keep on this path. In 6 weeks' time, you're going to get beaten and you're not going to the Olympics. Or you can focus on being the fastest you can be in 6 weeks' time. And, you've got the world best time, and you're a three-time world champion. So you'll probably win if you refocus. And, that's what I did, and I got through that trial. But that was an incredibly hard trial. It was surreal, I guess. From being down at Karapiro, we had morning TV down there. We had people, wanting to know everything.
The country was
about
watching,
it.
Right?
It was, and really captured the imagination. And it was strange. Very, very hard. At Olympics, you've got one final, right? And those other races, you sort of build up. But this was, a final every day for 3 days. And, physically took a huge toll, which I think you probably ended up seeing with Rob in that final race, breaking down with, arterial fibrillation.
You won, though, and you went to those Olympics in 2008. That was Beijing, wasn't it? And did you feel unlucky at all in your career? I mean, you've had so much success, and that's what we're focusing on today. But it was tough. You got a tummy bug, basically.
Yeah. Look, listen, it's sport, right? And it's tough. And I got sick, and that sucks. But it is what it is. And I guess I've got. Great memories of Beijing, and I'm also incredibly disappointed as well, because I didn't come away with what I wanted. So it was as I say, just a bit bittersweet, to be honest. I felt like I failed, but I'm also incredibly proud of that bronze medal, because I've never gone to those sort of places before or after that day. And that was, probably the catalyst that set me up for the next kind of 8 years, and those two gold medals I did win.
You weren't racing a normal race that day.
No, well, I kind of did, and it's funny, I actually thought I was going to win with 500 metres to go, and at 250 metres to go, I still thought I was going to win, and then, the wheels just completely fell off, and, as I say, never been to such a dark place before. I don't even remember the end of a race. Gosh. I don't remember much for a little bit after that. Thankfully I made it to the medal dice, but even that was a fight in itself. And, there's some interesting photos, and just looked spaced out, and I was very much that.
Before we leave 2008, have you made peace with Rob Waddell?
Oh, look, there's never really, my issue's not with Rob, it's with Rowing New Zealand and the way that was dealt with. So, I see Rob around Cambridge. We've got a perfectly fine relationship, as it should be. But, I still, and thankfully I've moved on with my relationship with Rowing New Zealand as well. But, you know, at the time I was not happy.
You guys all stick around Cambridge even after your careers, professional careers are over, hey?
Oh, it's a great place to live. It was funny, I guess, you know, I didn't like it when I moved there, but yeah, love it now.
There's got to be some pretty athletic kids coming through in that part of the world. Goodness me.
Yeah, there is indeed.
Okay, so off to the 2012 Olympics in London. You've won, bronze in 2008. You must have really been heading to London thinking, hey, this is it, Mahe, this is when we're going to get our gold. And then you're throwing up, I understand, on the day of the final again, but this time not a tummy bug.
Yeah, so, you know, it was kind of strange. And I guess, you know, what I realized in, you know, Beijing is, you know, these things can happen. So you've got to be so good. And, you know, I really switched my focus from, you know, basically aiming to win to being the best I could be every day. And that was what set me up for London. So, you know, when I'm vomiting on the morning of the final, I'm going, what is going on here? You know, I don't really suffer from nerves, but, you know, with that loss in Beijing, you know, I really realized that you know, you only get one or two opportunities in your life if you're lucky to win an Olympic gold medal, and, you know, I had to make the most of it. So, you know, I was incredibly nervous, and I had a terrible warm-up, but I knew, you know, sitting in the blocks, I've done what I need to do. I've been the best I can be every single day. And, you know, as soon as that buzzer went was, you know, that was the best part of my day because I was into what I knew I could do. And, you know, that's still up there with, you know, one of the greatest races of my career. You know, just being able to perform under pressure, because it's pretty hard when, you know, you get told you've got to perform at a certain time on a given day 4 years into the future. And, you know, everything has to line up on that day. And obviously in Beijing, I got sick and, you know, but you've got to do what you need to do to overcome anything that comes at you so you can still do it.
And we were talking about luck before. You did a back injury a couple of years earlier, which developed into osteoarthritis. You were struck by a car, Mahe?
Yeah, 6 weeks out from the Olympics, got hit by a car, did an AC joint injury that was going to take me 8 weeks to recover from. But, you know, again, I convinced the doctors it would be 10 days and spent 3 weeks out of the boat. But, you know, again, it didn't, you know, that was what I was prepared for after Beijing. Anything that got thrown at me, I was going to overcome it and still perform. So, you know, it was incredibly satisfying to win that one.
Can you tell us a bit about that race?
So look, it went fairly well as planned. Probably last 250, you know, I had Andre Sinek and me. I always knew that was where the race was going to develop. If I had more of a length, I'd always back myself over that last 250. If I had half a length, it was probably in Andre's kind of mode. He's a very good sprinter. I only had 3/4 of a length, so it was kind of like anyone's race. And I remember it clearly because he looked around at the 250 and just put on this big sprint. And I was thinking, oh man, I can't hold him. And I just chucked in. It was 8 strokes, and it was the 8 hardest strokes I could possibly muster. And he didn't close the gap. And he looked around again. And he realized he hadn't closed the gap. And his shoulders dropped. And, you know, that was the moment I knew I'd won the Olympic final. But I still had 23 strokes to go, and I thought of 23 different ways to screw it up, and very nearly did. I had one very wobbly stroke in that, but no, it was incredibly satisfying. You know, across the line, first moment was just pure relief. You know, I'd done it, I'd achieved my goal, and then, you know, the elation sort of kicked in, and, you know, pretty special for me. I grew up, you know, first 7 years of my life, or 7 years from 4 to 11, I grew up in the UK, so, you know, it did feel like a bit of home. And it was on my late grandfather's birthday, so it was pretty special to do that, you know, on that day in London.
You feel sorry for Andre Sinek?
No. You know, it's you know, we're good mates, and, you know, I guess he never quite achieved the ultimate of an Olympic.
He didn't.
You know, gold medal, but
sorry to interrupt, but he won the world championships the following year and the year after that and the year after that, and then must have come into the 2016 Olympics thinking, well, I got this Drysdale's number this time.
Yeah, and everyone thought that, apart from me. those years were great years for me, because I had no pressure on me. I was loving it. I had a young double that I was training with, and you know, they were double world champions. So, you know, I had just as much satisfaction those few years as I had, you know, winning myself. And but you know, as Rio went on, and you know, our crews, we got 9 medals in 2015. And at the World Champs, and you know, we as the week went on, more and more crews were missing out, including my young double, who, you know, were in the B final, and the pressure started to go on, and you know, for me, that's where I thrive, is under pressure, and you know, I remember thinking, I've got to do this, else, you know, that funding that we've been very fortunate to have is very much at risk if I don't perform today. And I still remember sitting in the start blocks just thinking, I'm the only guy in this final that knows they can win an Olympic gold medal. And you know, there's no nervousness, it was just pure, you know, confidence. And again, I thought the race went very well. With 500 to go, I thought, this is looking very much like London. And then 250 to go, I've got this quite comfortably. And then Demir came from nowhere with this incredible sprint, which, you know, I didn't expect at all, because he'd had such a strong start to the race, and usually you burn your biscuits too early. But no, it just kept coming. And, you know, again, it's about putting everything into it. And, you know, I finished that race. I didn't know what the result was. But I just sat at the finish just thinking, you know, whatever the result here, I'm pretty proud of myself, because, you know, I've put out a pretty good performance today. And, you know, I won't lie, a gold medal is better than a silver. But, yeah, I was satisfied either way,
Mahi,
at the end of that race.
We've got 30 seconds left. Anything you want to tell us about what's next for you?
So I'm currently a financial advisor. And, you know, enjoying that, I guess, from spending my life going backwards, now looking forward and trying to help people, you know, plan their futures. And, you know, very, very similar, I guess, to that rowing journey, you know, which is fantastic.
Thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Good to chat.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.